Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Sindiso.
Good afternoon, Zama. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Long time no speak, man. Have you been good?
I've been very well. I've been very well. And yourself?
Fantastic, man. Great to hear from you again. I hear that you are in good spirits.
Yes, I'm definitely in good spirits, Zama.
Lovely. Great to hear that. Now, we're talking about confidentiality here. And the question really that is under discussion is, can medical confidentiality be waived? Now, medical practitioners are required to comply with the principle of confidentiality for ethical and legal reasons. Patients often approach their trusted healthcare providers with confidence that their personal affairs will be kept private. And generally, it is unacceptable and illegal to disclose anyone's medical information without their consent. However, as with many rules in law, there may be or are exceptions that may apply to the general rule. Now, what are the exceptions to the rule regarding the privilege of medical privacy? Under what circumstances might that privilege be waived?
Thank you very much for the question, Zama. There are indeed a number of exceptions in relation to the dissemination of information, medical records, and so on and so forth. I'll just outline a few of the exceptions that, right. that are available in law. Okay. For starters, there is what we refer to as explicit consent. A patient may agree to share their medical records with a research institution, for instance, when they are conducting a study of a particular medical condition and so on and so forth. In this case, that patient actually waives the right to confidentiality and explicitly consents to their medical records being shared. And that consent must be specific to the purpose for which the study is going to be looking into. Secondly, Zama, the law may at times mandate healthcare providers to notify, the health department when there is what is called notifiable diseases. In the case, for instance, I'll give an example of Mpox, COVID, and various other strains of flu, for instance, the H1N1 virus, and so on and so forth. Medical practitioners may be compelled to disclose any instances of these notifiable diseases. Obviously, it is to protect the greater interest of the public. Then we talk about what is called a vital interest. In this case, a doctor may disclose the history of the medical history of a patient in the event of an emergency. For instance, that information may be disclosed to emergency personnel who are taking care of that particular patient at the time, and obtaining the consent of that particular data subject may not be feasible because they may be incapacitated and so on and so forth. And in that instance, the doctor is then has a duty to share the medical history of that particular patient. There's also instances, Zama, where anonymized data may be disseminated. In this case, where we reduct the information that is shared, for instance, personal information relating to the name, identification number, and so on and so forth. And what is shared is specifically just the information relating to a particular disease or so on and so forth. For instance, this is practiced at times when, you know, maybe clinics and hospitals maybe do, HIV tests and so on and so forth. The names are not disclosed, but the number of people that come to test is what is disclosed. So for instance, there's been 200 people that came to test and so on and so forth. This is obviously for statistical reasons. The fifth reason would be where there is another lawful basis under which those medical records may be disclosed. For instance, a government agency may access medical records to ensure compliance with public health regulations. In this case, the Protection of Personal Information Act allows the processing of medical information if required for the proper performance of a public duty or where there is a legitimate interest. One of the questions that may come in is, my information has been disseminated to particular persons and it was illegally obtained. So what then happens in this case?
Mm.
Where information has been disclosed illegally, its illegal disclosure, the fact that it has been illegally disclosed, it does not legitimize the subsequent use of that particular information.
Mm.
So once the information has been obtained unlawfully, it cannot be shared. In other words, if you've got the information, you cannot share it any further. Unlawful processing of that information is obviously you be in breach of the law, and you may be prosecuted when you disclose that particular information. And as I said earlier, that the status of the information, the protected status of the information, remains the same. In other words, regardless of the fact that the information has now been made public, it does not strip it of its protected status, so it still remains protected. There are a number of remedies, obviously, in the event where there's been a breach and somebody has shared or disseminated your information. The victims may pursue civil remedies against both the person who disclosed the information or any other party who further disseminates that particular information.
Mm.
I'll give you a number of remedies, Zama. They can be delictual action. In this case, one may claim for damages. A victim can sue for damages where their information has been unlawfully disclosed. In this case, they will obviously seek patrimonial damages in the form of financial damages or non-patrimonial damages, such as compensation for emotional distress or violation of privacy and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you obviously a practical example, and this is also outlined in one of the cases that I am going to speak about later if we do have time. Where one discloses, obviously, a health practitioner in this case would disclose the status, HIV status of a person, that particular person may sue the institution, which is the hospital, for that particular dissemination of information. One may interdict the dissemination of that information. For instance, we can apply for an interdict that information may not be disclosed further, or you may request that information be destroyed so that it is not disclosed any further. One may also lay a complaint with the under the Protection of Personal Information, which is POPIA, with the regulator, and the regulator may impose fines in relation to the disclosure of that particular information. Also, you can lodge a complaint with the HPCSA to that particular medical practitioner for violation, and they can be sanctioned, in the form of fines, or they may be suspended, or they may be deregistered from the HPCSA registration. Then one can also pursue civil claims for damages. For instance, constitutional rights have been violated. In this case, a person may say that they have been violated, their right to privacy has been violated, their dignity, and so on and so forth. And obviously, I'll give you the practical example of a particular case. NM and others versus Smith. It's a case. In this case, the writers of a particular biography disclosed the names of three HIV positive women. The background basically is that the biography was published on about 2002, and it disclosed the names of these women. And these women claimed that their rights had been violated, and their right to privacy, dignity, and their psychological integrity had been violated. At first, the High Court dismissed their claim against the author. And obviously, what they ordered that the publisher of that particular biography remove the names of these women. The ladies appealed to the Constitutional Court, and here they sought leave to appeal the High Court decision. In this case, Freedom of Expression Institute was admitted as amicus curiae. The legal dispute in this case was whether the disclosure of that particular information was a disclosure of private facts, and whether it was wrongful. The Constitutional Court, after consideration, found that the disclosure of the women's names and their HIV statuses was wrongful, and publication of private fact. The respondents in this case had violated the women's right to privacy and dignity, and the court emphasized the importance of protecting confidential medical information and the need to get informed consent. So in this case, obviously, the court did not find it necessary to develop common law to include negligence as a result, as an element of the liability in relation to such cases. So basically, this is what was found in relation to this particular case.
Interesting. So what I gather here, number one, is that unless it's because I'm now remembering the Zuma. I don't know if you remember the Zuma case.
Zuma versus Karen Moon.
But that case, I think, was a classical case, and his medical
that is correct.
Yeah, his medical records were then made out in public. I just don't remember how that case went, because it doesn't look like Karen actually suffered the consequences.
No, that is actually correct. Basically, I think how that case went, I didn't read the actual judgment as to what exactly it was the final judgment in relation to that case. But what was said in the court, I think the issue there was the access to the information. And basically what was argued in that case was that the information was already public in any event, because it was subject of a court proceeding. And as a journalist, she had the right to access that particular information. And because that information was public record as a court document, she had not breached. In other words, she had not secured that information unlawfully.
So are you then saying that as a third party, you because of your responsibility or job, you can then share someone's medical records?
Not necessarily. I mean, these issues are decided on a case-by-case basis. And in this case,
mm-hmm.
one of the major complaints in relation to the former President Zuma was that Karen Moon had unlawfully accessed that information.
Mm-hmm.
And the court had to decide on whether she had unlawfully accessed the information. And in this case, what they decided was that she had not unlawfully accessed the information because it became public record. And as a result of her job as a journalist,
mm-hmm.
she had the right to access that particular information.
Mm. Lovely. And lastly, I was talking to listeners earlier about if a person goes to the doctor, you know, employers, they own your time, they own, because you're employed by them. So your time really and practically, belongs to them because they contract you for a particular time. Hours in a week, etc. And if you're not around to carry that out, you then have a responsibility to account for where you have been with your time. And we have seen many people having gone to a doctor, bringing a doctor's note, etc. And in some instances, employers may have doubt that this may actually not be true. And unfortunately, according to Popia, it may then not be possible, unless, of course, there's a subpoena to acquire those files, not so?
That is correct. That is correct. The protection of that particular information is obviously not absolute. There must obviously be a legitimate interest as to why one seeks that particular information. And obviously, if the access to the information is requested in terms of the confines of the act, then the employer may access that particular information. But however, the employer cannot willy-nilly access such information, and the doctor cannot disseminate such information unless they are ordered by the court to do so.
Very interesting, Cindy. So thank you so much, man, for your time. It has been a pleasure talking to you as always. Have a fantastic afternoon further.
Thank you very much, Samai, and the listeners.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.